Live from Los Angeles, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by Mark Gonzalez, Vice Chairman of the Los Angeles County Democratic Party, Dr. Karen Kinney, Coordinator of the San Fernando Valley Patriots, and Mark Viviades, the Regional Vice President of the California Republican Party. Our program tonight coming to you from our California home base at the Westwood One Studios in beautiful Culver City. Our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. You can send me comments tonight at brucedumont@museum.tv. If you want to tweet me a comment, it's at Dumo, at D-U-M-O. And as always, we are live on the Internet at beyondthebeltway.com. But however, those listening in the Chicagoland area, the television show tonight will be different than the radio broadcast you were about to hear because we're on remote, we're not video tonight. But again, there will be a video presentation, which will be a sterling discussion of what's happening in North Korea. And again, a great show from last week, but again, it'll be the TV show tonight. But again, we have lots to talk about this evening, and unfortunately, we begin this program again as we frequently have done over the last several months, talking about a horrible act that took place in London, where the terrorists of the world are on stage again, victims of a pleasant night in London gone awry. And I want to spend just a few moments. Obviously, if you're living in Los Angeles, you are a long, long way from London. But Mark Viviades, you're the head of the California Republican Party, regional member of the party. When you hear of yet another terrorist attack, is it too commonplace for you living in California now?
It is. Yes, it is too commonplace. Luckily, it isn't hitting the United States the way it is in Europe, and that is because of mistakes Europe has been making up until now. But yeah, I mean, we're hearing about it. I mean, just in England, it's three in the past 3 weeks, I believe. It is too much, and they need to start doing some things to turn things around security-wise.
Karen Kinney also joins us. You're with the San Fernando Valley Patriots. We'll talk about that as the program unfolds this evening. But again, you're a long, long way from London, but has the terrorism in Europe affected you, your friends, your neighbors, the way you think, the way you live your life in any way?
Daily life, no. However, when we're connecting to people that were our countrymen at one point, I think that there's a danger here of being sensitized to the volume and the magnitude and the growing magnitude and exposure of terrorists locally.
Mark Gonzalez also joins us, making his first visit. He's the vice chairman of the Los Angeles County Democratic Party. Mark, nice to have you with us. We have a couple of Marks this evening, so I'll jump in and let you know who's talking. Your reaction to the people that you live with in your community, does it impact you in any way what happens in London or around the world?
I think it does. I think it does for folks. Just no matter if you're a Democrat or a Republican, it's something that you have to be aware of, whether you go to the airport. I think there was something about Las Vegas being under a threat recently as well in a new ISIS video. Yeah, I think it is something that you have to second guess yourself as to where you're going, where you're traveling to, and what you think is going to happen and whether or not we're safe.
Now, the president, when he tweeted about this, one of the things that he tweeted about is he took a swipe at the courts. He talked about the travel ban. When things like this happen, does it make the travel ban more acceptable to maybe people like yourself that want to resist everything that Donald Trump talks about?
No, because I think that the travel ban was just a coward way of him targeting specific groups of people that I think it was just a racist move on his part. Is what it was.
Mark, I'm going to disagree vehemently with
okay.
that. It is not a ban against a particular group of people. It's a ban against six or seven countries that have basically a breakdown in government, so that we cannot vet the people coming from that country. It is a basic safety move.
Muslim people during Ramadan, right?
No, but that's six or seven countries, not the other 40. Countries that we have no travel ban, so it's not against Muslim people. It's a small minority of Muslim Muslim-majority countries, but it's countries that we cannot vet their folks because they basically don't have a government in place.
And if we go just to the security issue, I think we need to vet. And my hope today is that we can avoid the personality politics and some of the name-calling and tone that down just a little bit. Because in my field, which is psychotherapy, I absolutely believe we need to keep communication true, real, and clear. And right now, I have read that document. There is nothing in there that is, in my way of thinking, confusing. I think what confused the courts to this point is the words, are the words that President Trump said as candidate Trump. And I think we have to look to what he creates and what he documents rather than opinions that were from a candidate.
But he tweets all his opinions.
Yeah, but yeah, let's follow up on that. I mean, one of the things that the court said was that they took what he said as a candidate, and they extrapolated that was the motive behind what he was trying to do. And then there was the story quoting Rudy Giuliani when responding to the controversy surrounding it. He did say that he was looking for a way to get around a Muslim ban.
You know, the court shouldn't be looking at motivation. This isn't a crime. Right. If they looked at the wording of the travel ban, it is totally constitutional and legal. But the courts and some of those people, some of the judges that have been put in place by the Obama administration, just wanted to find a way to push back on President Trump, and that's what they're doing. But looking at it legally, It is not illegal. It is not unconstitutional. It is a total legal and smart ban.
Do you think – I mean, but it's hard to – I guess we run into the same problem because this program normally comes from Chicago, which is also a very blue city in a very blue state. Maybe it's not as blue as California. It's not as blue as Los Angeles. But again, out in the broader body politic, I want to just sort of look beyond, you know, where we're doing this program from. Are there people who will agree when they hear the stories and as the reporting that has come out thus far based on what happened in London, they're going to say, you know what, there's nothing wrong with looking at Muslims or people who look like they're from a Muslim country differently. Doesn't mean they're bad, but maybe they should get a second look. Mark Gonzalez.
I mean, you're just basically saying you're cherry picking people that you can check and see what their status is versus other people that you can't. And I think that as someone who was at the airport that when the travel ban happened in January, I mean, you're attacking a race of people to come into the U.S. just simply based on being of certain religion. And I think
it's based on also in appearance. And I guess my question to you, if you were a police officer and there was a terrorist attack and you were responding and you had to investigate that and you saw a group of people who appear to be Arab or Muslims, would you interrogate them differently than if they looked like me?
No, I would. I personally treat everybody the same. But what I'm saying is that the Manchester incident, that person was from Manchester. Let's be very clear about that.
No, there's no question about that. 1-800-723-8289 from coast to coast and border to border. I'm Bruce Dumont. Let's get your reaction. We've got a lot more to talk about this evening. I want to get your reaction to whether your life has changed at all because of the ongoing acts of terrorism in London and around the world. I'm Bruce Dumont, back from Culver City shortly.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
Thank you all very much. Admiral Kelly, Captain Card, officers and sailors of the USS Abraham Lincoln, my fellow Americans, major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
Most of my family, they never graduated high school, so I'm trying to break that barrier.
My daughter, Brooklyn, was also a motivation for me to go back to school. Every day after work, went straight to school, and it paid off.
At age 26, Kareem finished his high school diploma.
I could not have done it alone. I see the future is really bright for me.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Bruce Dumont back at Culver City. We continue this evening, 1-800-723-8029. We've already have a caller. Let's bring them into the conversation. Rick is listening to us in Austin, Texas on KLBJ. Nice to hear from Texas tonight. Go ahead. Hello? Rick, are you there?
Hello?
Go ahead. You're on the air. Make sure the radio is down. Hello? You're on the air.
Hello?
You are on the air. You are on the air.
Hello?
You are on the air. I can hear you. You cannot hear me. Go ahead with your question. He's gone. Well, we're off to a flying stop here, but we'll try again. Let's go. I think you guys wanted to weigh in. When I say Mark Viviati's at Carrot, you wanted to weigh into the question, the rhetorical question I asked Mark beforehand.
Could you repeat the question, Bruce?
Well, the question is, if you were investigating a crime,
yes,
and there was an act of terrorism, and you were a police officer, and there was a group of people who looked like they were Muslims or they were Arab, would you be interrogating them differently than you would me personally?
When there's any crime, they're usually named suspects. And when I say named, I don't mean they know the specific suspects, but there's a description that goes out. I was speaking during the break to Karen. If there was a robbery at a convenience store and they said that, for example, 2 6-foot-tall white guys just robbed the 7-Eleven, then we would be looking for 2 6-foot-tall white guys, and we would stop probably everyone that looked like those suspects. Same thing, if it's a terrorist act and it seemed that some young Muslim men committed the crime, you know, young 20-something, then we're going to be stopping people that look like that. It's not racial profiling. You're not stopping people.
But you're assuming that a Muslim committed that crime.
No. I just said if there was a crime committed and they said that it looked like some 20-something Muslim men committed,
I look Muslim and I'm Mexican.
Well, we would stop you if you looked
that
way.
Then that's racial profiling.
That's not racial profiling.
Yes, it is, because I'm Mexican.
It is crime profiling, and it would be stupid over a 70-year-old white lady
I think the answer to the question, and then we are going to move on to another subject. We got a little off target here, but the difference, Mark, is that you know they might stop you because you've identified you think you could be viewed as Muslim. I would agree with that.
Yeah.
Okay. But they would probably interview you before they would interview me because I don't look like a Muslim at all.
That's assuming that they're saying it's a Muslim person. Have terrorist attacks as well as in Oklahoma.
Sometimes the first thing that a police officer asks is, okay, what did the bad guy look like? So it starts with the description. And frankly, they're probably saying it was probably a white guy or a black guy. That's probably the first thing they say.
Yeah, you don't say, hi, he looks Muslim. I mean, you don't know that.
Well, I want to shorthand this because if I were committing shoplifting – they would say a 5'2", dark-haired woman, white. They wouldn't say an Irish Catholic woman because you can't assume religion. Yeah. However, you can certainly profile by suspect if someone says 5'2", dark-haired woman over the age of 40, then guess what? I would be surprised if I wasn't stopped.
I want to move on. I think we've touched on this, but I want to talk about it because we have a unique situation here, as we frequently do back in Chicago, as I mentioned. We're in a very, very blue state, and there's two political challenges here. Mark Viviati, I want to talk with you. You're with the state Republican Party. How on earth do you put the pieces back together to make any viable run for any of the 6 statewide offices, let alone the U.S. Senate offices? How do you make a viable run for any of those offices at a statewide level, given the demographics of the state, the politics of the state? How do you do it?
Well, as an example, here in California, we've just had a huge gas tax increase. And this is the kind of thing that motivates voters to say, hey, we have a one-party system in California because basically the Republicans, there are so few that they're almost irrelevant. So because the Democrats were so arrogant in passing this gas tax, which hurt not only everybody who drives, also truckers and anybody who moves anything by vehicle, they've gotten arrogant. And the voters know that. And they are so livid at the fact that this tax increase was passed when they don't think it was necessary. And now they're going to be looking at putting people in there that are as opposed to those who passed the gas tax.
The gas tax was put in place to help for public infrastructure, number one. It's to help produce more jobs in the state of California.
Oh, please. Oh, please.
And I'm sorry, the people that it does affect are poor people who are in favor of it. I don't have a Tesla. I don't have any of that like most Republicans probably do. I have
not
a regular vehicle.
No.
But
not,
what I'm
not
saying
not
is
most
that
most Republicans have Teslas.
I do not.
Well, that's
some
my perception.
Tesla owners are Republican. Go ahead.
Well, listen. My point is that most Republicans aren't necessarily ones who have to commute to work daily. It's not affecting them, and they are the ones that this SB1, AB1, which is what you're referring to, is going to put a lot of people to work. And I think that you're missing the point.
First
here.
Of all. Republicans are the working people in society. It's not the elite Democrat Party. Those are the ones who don't care about gas tax increases. Those that are the poorest in society are the ones who drive the farthest, have the cars that are the least fuel efficient, and the ones that are hurt most by the gas
now,
tax.
Now, I want to ask Mark Gonzalez the other flip of that question. You're the vice chair of the California Los Angeles Party. Very, very Democratic city. Democratic county, Democrats as far as you can see. You have every statewide office. You've got most of the congressional delegation. You got two U.S. senators. How do you continue to motivate people to join the Democratic Party or financially support it? Because you win everything, and are you fearful that you will be off your game because you don't have meaningful competition?
No, I think we have great competition. I think that's the only problem we have with the Democratic Party is that we have some
great... But
it's great,
within.
Within the Democratic Party, we have our own great Democratic competition. Look, California is definitely a blue state, and California definitely produces... many folks that like Gavin Newsom, you've got Antonio Villaraigosa, you've got others who are going to be running against each other. We've got Jerry Brown. We've got John Chung. We've got a great number of people in the state. And I think with everything going on with immigration, you've got the resistance movement. You've got folks in the Bernie Sanders movement. I mean, Democrats in the state, whether it's local, I mean, we were turning out newer citizens who believe in the values of the Democratic Party. You've got folks in the Democratic Party who look like everyday folks here in California. I think that's the difference. Now, in certain parts of the
So is the challenge then, because you have such a broad branch, a bench and a huge constituency of different shapes, sizes, shapes and colors, do you, when you're putting a ticket together or when you're looking at who you're going to support, you have to look at it in a uniquely demographic way. You have to make sure that there's something for the Mexicans, there's something for the blacks, there's something for the gays, there's something for the liberals in Beverly Hills, something for obviously the Asians. You have such a wide, you have such a number of people in your coalition. You have to make sure that every single one of them gets a piece of the pie. Am I hearing you that's the challenge you have?
Not necessarily. I mean, take a look at the 34th Congressional District race that election is on Tuesday.
Tell people around the world
I think you guys might know about this. So in California, 34th Congressional days, Congressmember Becerra at the time was appointed by Jerry Brown and then eventually the legislature to now be the Attorney General, which left a vacancy in Northeast Los Angeles. So you have two Democratic candidates running against each other, Jimmy Gomez, who's the officially candidate endorsed by the California Democratic Party, and you've got Robert Ahn, who's a Koreatown small business owner who's also identifies himself as a Democrat or just recently became a Democrat and was a Republican, and he's using massive smear tactics against Senator Jimmy Gomez for this seat, and it's becoming a race issue as you've got the API candidate who's turning out more API folks to vote for him just simply because he is API, and that's simply what his message is. Jimmy Gomez is somebody who's a candidate for everyone, and I think that's the reflection of the Democratic Party.
Also,
you have to be the candidate for everyone,
not just
this or that.
But also in this particular case, because obviously you have a preference in this race. I read through the lines of your comments there. The other thing we should mention is we talked about the future of the Republican Party. It's that you have a non-preference. I mean, you had a U.S. Senate run, and both of the candidates were Democrats. The Republicans didn't even have a chance, and that happens at every level, right? It isn't just for the U.S. Senate.
It happens a lot. Yeah, for the last U.S. Senate race, we had something like 12 Republican candidates, and again, that shows the democracy within the Republican Party. We don't choose.
And at the beginning of that cycle, you had I would describe him as an attractive, moderate, Hispanic, Republican, Rocco Chavez, mm-hmm. who looked like he was putting a campaign together for a statewide office, and then along comes Donald Trump, and goodbye to everything he was talking about.
Yeah, well, actually, there were other reasons why Rocky kind of dropped out. It really wasn't because of Donald Trump. But in any event, in the Republican
Party...
Well,
he said that on this program that it was about Donald Trump, but
okay, yeah,
he has other problems. Okay.
Yeah, he has some other problems. He's a great guy. He's a great legislator. But in any event, we, the Republican Party, doesn't decide which candidate we want. It's a bottom-up process, and we just wait and see which one comes to the top. And that's why we had 12 candidates. None of them raised enough money. They were fighting against each other. We, the party, didn't choose one. And unfortunately, the two Democrats had a lot more money and won.
Karen, now in your particular case, you're nonpartisan.
Yes,
but you're constitutionalist.
Constitutional and conservative leaning. In our group, we have what used to be called Blue Dog Democrats, the more conservative folks, or now liberal. And I want to come back to the original question because I think it's important. One is, the Democrat Party has balkanized itself into special interest groups, large around race and economics. And the grand old party needs to be governed on principle, as far as my people are concerned. And my people are generally declined to state, some Republicans. We're tired of people saying one thing and doing another.
We've got to let you follow up on that when we come back. 1-800-723-8029 from coast to coast and border to border tonight. From beautiful Culver City, California, this is Bruce Dumont, and you're listening to Beyond the Beltway.
This is Larry King at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. Tonight we've got a special guest for you to meet. What do you like to do as a kid?
I like to play baseball. I like to watch television.
What was your favorite sports team?
Sports team growing up was the St. Louis Cardinals.
What was your favorite vacation?
I think the vacation we went to New York City to the World's Fair. See Yankee Stadium.
Who was your childhood hero?
Childhood hero, probably Hopalong Cassidy.
What was your biggest fear growing up?
The biggest fear probably was that I would irritate my father.
What's the silliest thing you've ever done?
Irritated my father.
Order your gift certificate now at museum.tv. That's museum.tv.
Bruce Dumont back in Culver City. We continue with Beyond the Beltway. Thank you wherever you're listening from coast to coast this evening. We appreciate it. And I want to begin by asking you, Mark Gonzalez from the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party thus far has really taken on a very strong resistance party. And sort of the image of this resistance, much of it is emanating from the state of California. And so my first question to you is, once upon a time, when an election was over, to the victor went the spoils, and the other party would lick their wounds, go back to their corner, and plan for the next fight. Mm-hmm. What was it so unique? What was so unique about 2016 that the traditional way that politics in America has been played needed to be changed?
In regards to the Democratic Party having to change itself on November the 9th?
No, on the role of the party that lost a presidential election, mm-hmm. not swallowing hard, crying for a couple of weeks, mm-hmm. and then getting back to life and letting the winner conduct business. The word resistance, it was the loyal party of opposition or the loyal opposition party, but the word resistance was not part of any election we've ever had in the history of this country.
Which derived after the election because I think here's the deal. So, look, November 9th, the Democratic Party was, I think, in shock, and I'm going to answer this in three quick ways. I would say the first part is the Democratic Party, in particular on the national level, not in California because we did definitely lead the way on that, but the national way – I think they lost their way into certain communities, even in the Latino community, African-American community, and I think that they got ahead of themselves and think they had it in the bag, number one. And I think they forgot what the Democratic Party stood for on the national level. But November 9th, and after a couple of weeks of having to figure it out, we had to regroup and literally get it back together. And I think the Democratic Party has to remember where its kind of roots are at and how going door to door and how, you know, getting the values and about jobs and other things that mean something to somebody is what the issue is. And the Democratic Party has to restructure itself in order to do that. And I think that the resistance came out of what Donald Trump was doing in the first few days in office. I mean, he is, you know, the repeal of the Health Care Act, the Muslim ban, the what he's doing to LGBT rights, women's rights. I mean, we have to unify as a party and resist against the Trump administration, who's trying to rolling literally everything the administration, Obama administration, has done.
But looking back historically, hasn't the party that is replacing an incumbent party, haven't they gone about undoing what the party they threw out did? I mean, that's not unique, is it? I mean, granted, you had a candidate that spoke very firmly.
We've never had a candidate like Donald Trump, and I think the Republicans can agree how embarrassing he was, even to the Republican Party, before he became the nominee.
No, I do not agree with that at all.
Well, he was an embarrassment. He was an embarrassment. He still continues to be.
But this is where we have a difference. I mean, you say that he's an embarrassment and he has to be resisted, and yet when Democrats talk about that, and they may look across the table at a Mark Viviati's and say, you know, you're a Trump guy, the reality is that Donald Trump got 62 million people. So if you insult those that voted for Donald Trump, it isn't. That's a lot of people.
Well, you can argue.
I know
you've
got
popular
more voters.
Vote? Thank you.
But that's not the way our constitution works.
That's right.
Well, in your favor. But before that, he was calling out the Electoral College.
No, he was. But the point is, yes. Is you're right. He got more vote, or she got more votes than he did.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the way we count votes in America. And the big difference of where he got the difference in that vote, it came because of your work in California. California is where the extra 3 million votes came from. It didn't come from Nebraska. Didn't come from Wisconsin. It came from California.
Mm-hmm.
So my question to you now, let me ask you this question. What is your answer to the same question? Why do you think that this is, that the Democratic Party is now the party of resistance, not just the loyal opposition?
Well, first of all, Donald Trump was a man of the people. That's why he was elected, because he was a straight-talking guy during the campaign, and a lot of the kind of elitists and presumptuous people didn't like that. But he won, and the average person, the average working person, the average working family really appreciated that.
We're not billionaires. How can I relate to somebody who's a billionaire?
They call him the working man's billionaire or something to that effect, because Hillary Clinton is way more of an elitist with her multi-millions. Maybe she doesn't quite have a billion. But Donald Trump spoke to the average person.
Karen, I want to get Karen's reaction. Karen, why is this election different? Why is the level of resistance greater today than in the history of the country?
Two words: personality politics. In my field, I would diagnose the resistance movement, or the resist movement, as oppositional defiance. It's what happens when someone feels entitled, and then they feel aggrieved because their expectations were disappointed, or they feel like, hey, guess what? I'm going to buck your authority. And what happens here, and I think it comes from the Democrats, I agree with both Marks, both parties have lost their base. In a sense of not in numbers, but in connection to them. We can sit here and argue all the list of names. There's LGBT. There's rhinos. We can go back and forth over that and splay the parties. But Americans in the Middle West, in the Midwest, in the center of the country, the flyover zones, if you will, they're close to the earth. They're close to their pocketbooks. Kitchen table politics got lost in the election. And Trump, when he was talking about the economy, when he was talking about security, plugged in, like it or not, plugged into core issues that people who have fences and bank accounts, small ones.
As did Bernie Sanders.
Yes, although he's a socialist.
In a much different way. Yeah.
In a different way.
But Donald Trump is lying to the American people. He's not keeping his campaign promises, and there's a larger
poll.
He
has kept more campaign promises than any other candidate to date.
Where do you think he has not kept a campaign promise?
I have to get all my notes together on this.
Well, it's not that he hasn't kept his campaign promises.
I mean, one of the problems is that
I think
he has kept his campaign promises.
And that's why the Democrats are so resistant.
And that's why they're so resistant, is because it's really ticked them off.
The American people are the ones that put him in place because they wanted him to do the things he's doing, to push back on a lot of the Obama agenda and to take apart a lot of what was illegal about what President Obama did with so many of his executive orders, with passing Obamacare against the will of the American people, and taking that apart is something that the Democrats are just going insane about. They can't stand that. It's one of the reasons they're pushing back and not working with him to try to do what's best for the American people.
But would you acknowledge also, as Karen referenced, that you have the president is one image of the Republican Party. Then you have the Congressional Republican Party. And maybe the Congressional Republican Party still doesn't get it. They don't get what the 62 million people really wanted. Would you acknowledge that?
To some degree, yes. But if you look at the rank-and-file Republicans that are part of the Republican Party, they're all totally on board with the conservative values that Karen speaks of. But there are some people, once they get to Washington, then they kind of lose their way. I think having Donald Trump elected, they're kind of getting it now because they see that the American people were so angry and that they were so behind Donald Trump and the things he wanted to do that they're getting on board with that too. There are still outliers. That's why we're having a problem getting health care passed. But again, hopefully we'll get that done.
Karen?
Well, I have my Irish sense of humor is coming upon me, and it's kind of like there's a number of veterinarians going after Trump to make him a gelding, and then other people are getting mad, but how come he's not, you know, being fertile? I don't understand. The fact is that every step of the way, inch by inch, yard by yard, he has been slogging through roadblocks put up by political parties and people front and back. He's fighting like a 2-3 front war with his own party and with the other folks who are in the resistance movement. The fact that he has even gotten the Supreme Court nominee through is a miracle, let alone
how
some
of... How do you feel? And again, we sure. have probably a lot of people around the country. We can flip the parties, and that is you are someone who obviously is more conservative than liberal. You're living in a state that is very liberal. You have a president who probably is more liberal than you are, and yet you get tagged maybe as a Republican sympathizer, and you live in one of the most Democratic states ever in
yes.
the history of the country.
The word isn't tagged; it's tarred.
How do you use your energy to fight against something that you think is wrong, which is the resistance to Donald Trump?
People ask me, how did I vote? How do I vote? And I say, I vote for the Constitution. What are you voting for? I want to know what principles inform actions. I'm unclear. I was registered a Democrat for 35 years. I don't know what they stand for anymore. I know the groups they represent.
Do you know what Donald Trump stands for?
Yes, he's a populist. And he's a progressive. He, in my way of thinking, I think he absolutely believes the solutions rest with bigger government. I'm a small government person. So is the Tea Party by definition. We want security. We want economic free enterprise. And we want people to follow the rule of law.
See, I don't quite
agree with
that.
If I could go back to
I'm sorry, Mark.
I just want to go back to the health care portion of this that was mentioned about not keeping his promises. So Trump promised to not cut Medicaid. And he said he would provide health care for everyone with lower premiums. And he said he would protect pre-existing conditions and they would help the sick and the poor. The truth, Medicaid is gutted, premiums will rise for millions, and the elderly and those with pre-existing conditions, and the real poor will be most harmed. You tell me, how does that help the everyday average working people?
First of all, Medicare was gutted when Obamacare went in place. That was part of the plan. And also, Obamacare is imploding. It's not viable, and we have to put a market-based...
It will need 23 million fewer Americans uninsured, and that's what Donald Trump is doing.
Law in place
so that would, but for you, that means 23 million more potential Democratic voters, right? Is that the way you view it?
Well, if we're going to say it like that, sure, but it's
and
definitely
not a joke.
And it's not
that we'll lose. They do not lose health care, those 23 million.
I'm
that's
Bruce
another Dumas, discussion.
1-800-723-8289. We're from Culver City tonight. Where are you? And where you are, give us a call.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
There can be no stable and enduring peace without the participation of the People's Republic of China and its 750 million people. That is why I have undertaken initiatives in several areas to open the door for more normal relations between our two countries.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
I wasn't prepared to be a caregiver to mom. I had no idea how hard it would be and what I would need to know. Things I never thought of, like how to improve her mood and ways for me to stay positive. Luckily, I found the Caregiving Resource Center from AARP. It had articles about the basics, but also information about the hurdles I was facing. Caregiving Resource Center at aarp.org/caregiving. Articles, tips, and tools to help you both care for your loved one and care for yourself. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Bruce Dumont back live from Culver City, California. Let's head north to Monterey, California, where Mark is listening to us on KION. Nice to hear from Monterey, California. Go ahead.
Hey, Bruce. Thanks very much. You know, when I was listening to the representative of the California Democratic Party talking about connecting to working voters, I just wonder, you know, what these folks in the Democratic Party are smoking. You know, when you deliberately make the cost of living more expensive for people, how can you say that you're the friend of the working class? You know, when you raise the driver's registration fee, vehicle registration, at a minimum of $25 on up to a high of $175 a year, when you raise gasoline taxes another 12 cents a gallon, and California already has the highest gas prices in the nation, and then it's going to go to 20 cents a gallon, these have huge impacts on the people who live month-to-month, paycheck-to-paycheck in California, which is one of the most expensive places to live in the nation to begin with. So to me, the problem is, the contradiction is, how can you claim to be a friend of the working class when you make it so difficult for the working class to live here? I mean,
right, we have a lot of Marks now. Let's let Mark Gonzalez respond to Mark from Monterey.
Look, in all honesty, I'm somebody who, when this had come out, was kind of confused by it as well. Okay, I'm not saying that it was the best thing to do. I'm not saying it was the worst thing to do. Right? I'm kind of in the middle on that, and I have to admit the fact that, yes, I do understand that putting that tax and what it does to your wallet when you go to the pump every day. I understand that. But if that means filling up my gas tank and driving on a road that's paved, where I'm not going to get a pothole, where I'm not going to have other infrastructure issues, that I can drive on a bridge that's not going to fall off, my safety, I'm willing to pay that little extra tax for that safety. And I think that that also is helping to provide jobs across the state, in every part of the state. And that's exactly what this is going to do. And I think we have to take that into consideration, you know, when we talk about these things. Now, I agree with you in the sense that, as somebody whose family lives paycheck to paycheck, this is something to definitely consider. But at the end of the day, in the long run, for me, it's about the infrastructure of our state, our roads, our highway, and providing good jobs to everyday working Californians.
And here's Mark in Monterey. I'm going to give you the follow-up, and then Mark back here. Mark in Monterey, you want to respond to that?
Here's my rebuttal to that. I have a 1965 car that I first registered in 1977 in California for $6. Today, that car costs $82 to register. When I run that $6 through the BLS, through the CPI calculator, the inflation calculator, what cost $6 in 1977 should only cost $27 and change in 2017. The delta is that 50-something odd dollars extra in there that the state of California has glommed on. And the question that I and every other person in California wants answered is, what in the heck have you done with the extra money? You're raising our vehicle registration fees far beyond the rate of inflation over a period of 40 years, as more than triple, and yet you have nothing to show for it. And all you can tell me is, well, if you want safe roads, you want potholes, you want bridges that are safe, you've got to give us more money.
Look, I don't have a vote in the legislature on that, so I can't speak to that. So,
well, here's the problem, and I'm a little older than Mark Gonzalez, so I've seen this time after time. Every couple of years, the legislature comes back and they increase gas taxes and road taxes, and then they divert the money back into the general fund to pay for other programs of their pet projects, and then they want to raise gas taxes again. The people have seen this, and they finally caught on to it, and that's why they're so upset. Furthermore, these kind of tax increases hurt business, and the unemployment level goes up because businesses die because of it.
Brian in Roselle, Illinois, you're listening to us on TuneIn, one of the many apps where you can pick up this program around the world. Go ahead.
Hi, good evening. When I was on hold, I couldn't hear the radio show, so I don't know where the conversation went exactly.
But we were talking about you. We were wondering, right? What the hell are they thinking about in Roselle, Illinois?
And you, well, I just want to reiterate, you know, political diehards in both parties need to wake up and realize that most Americans do not like the Republican Party and do not like the Democratic Party. For instance, you were talking about Trump lying and telling big stories and fibs. Well, so are both parties constantly, and we're sick of it. For instance, the Republicans say we can cut taxes, expand the military, engage in overseas conflicts, and cut social spending. You know, nobody likes these ideas. It doesn't make any sense. You can't do it. Now, the Democrats, they say we can have unlimited immigration, let everybody into the country, no restrictions.
That's not true.
Give everybody everything, and we'll just raise everybody's taxes, and everybody will be happy. And it won't affect the economy. It won't affect unemployment. It won't affect all the social programs. Another idiotic idea. People see through this. It just doesn't work. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. We have to realize we're living in an age of limits. We cannot have unlimited anything. We have to start cutting back on all of our activities.
Brian, one point I will get Mark Gonzalez to respond, because when you were going through your litany, the one thing he disagreed with was, I guess, open borders or unlimited immigration.
It just drives me nuts that the first thing that people do when they turn to immigration is they point to Mexico and they want to build a wall and that you want to put that around.
He didn't say Mexico.
No, I didn't say that. But what I'm saying is that's the first thing people will usually turn to. And that conversation and how it's going to be paid for and who's going to build it is a whole other topic.
Should there be unlimited immigration?
Absolutely.
I think there needs to be a process. There needs to be a process. I'm not saying just open the floodgates and let everybody in just because they want to come in. You have to have something.
Is the current process broken?
Yes, that's why we need a wall. We need to know who's coming in here. We need to be able to limit.
A wall where?
A limit around this
Canada?
Country. Yeah,
Canada?
Sure. Canada too. Canada, the United States.
But
right
not
now,
part
because
of the conversation.
Because of geography, it's not the same kind of a border. You can't walk over most of the Canadian border. You can over the Mexican border.
I think one of the things that needs to be paramount here is national security, keyword national, second word security, however we find that. We cannot have open everything, everybody come in, ollie, ollie, oxen free. Imagine living in a house with no doors, no windows, and no locks.
That's not what's happening, folks. That's not what's happening. You act like that there's a lot of Mexicans who are coming in here through that way, just walking over. It's a controlled area.
We have a right to determine who comes in here and how many. It's up to the United States to do what's best for the United States, and we
but
have
that
no...
includes all borders, not just the southern.
Yes, yes.
I'm Bruce Dumont. We've got a pause. 1-800-723-8209. Another full hour live from Culver City. Don't go away. Be back after news.
Rich is just a really, really, really good guy. The term good egg isn't enough to describe him. He's also certified organic and free range. Rich puts the cap back on everything. The toothpaste, the olive oil, the shampoo, everything. He lets his 10-year-old nephew beat him at virtual tennis, even though he can straight up slay his 10-year-old nephew in virtual tennis. When the toilet paper is running low, Rich replaces the roll on the actual holder, not just on the back of the toilet. Rich is texting and driving. Rich? No. What are you doing, Rich? I was just telling everyone how great you are. Texting and driving makes good people look bad. Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Miss Lewinsky. I never told anybody to lie, not a single time, never. These allegations are false, and I need to go back to work for the American people. Thank you.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
Hey, everybody, this is Josh Groban.
After so many years on the stage, one of my favorite things about music is its ability to inspire and nourish the soul. That's why I'm proud to work with Feeding America, an organization that inspires hope for families in need and helps nourish the 16 million kids in this country struggling with hunger. Every year, billions of pounds of excess food go to waste, while one in five children may be left not knowing where their next meal is coming from, or if it's even coming at all. Thankfully, the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks collects surplus food and helps deliver it to kids in need across the country. But they can't do it alone. Join me in supporting Feeding America and your local food bank at feedingamerica.org. Together, we can solve hunger. Together, we're Feeding America.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
The Museum of Broadcast Communications is Chicago's perfect place for senior citizens. Enjoy a stroll down memory lane. Reminisce as museum artifacts, photos, and classic TV shows trigger recollections from your childhood. Enjoy the TLC you'll receive from our expert tour guides. Discounts for groups of 20 or more. Schedule yours right now at museum.tv or call 312-245-8200. Plan your fun trip now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications.
Bruce Dumont continues on Beyond the Beltway. Thank you very much for joining us from coast to coast and border to border. We are in Culver City, California this evening. Lots to talk about. We've already talked about quite a bit in the first hour. We've got another full hour, but I want to take a moment of personal privilege here. People around the country know that I am a lifelong baseball fan. And when I was a kid, I loved baseball, and there was a movie that came out called Fear Strikes Out. It was about Jimmy Pearsall, the star center fielder for the Boston Red Sox. And I went to see it, and it was more than just a baseball movie. It was about a young man with a very serious mental problem, a problem with a father that was overbearing, and it was about mental health more than about baseball. And I always remembered that. It was sort of indelibly etched in my mind because it was about a baseball player that I knew as a young boy. And many, many years later, he became a sports broadcaster along with Harry Carey for the Chicago White Sox. And if you're a regular listener, you know I'm a White Sox fan. So later in my life, in listening to them every night when there was a Sox game, they were the two most entertaining baseball announcers ever anywhere. They were so entertaining. The baseball team wasn't very entertaining then, but Harry and Jimmy Pearsall were very entertaining. And at one point in his life, later on, I was producing a local television show, and Jimmy Pearsall got into a battle with Tony La Russa, who was then the first-term manager of the Chicago White Sox. They got into a fist fight, and it was a big story. And he came on the program that I produced the following day and told me his side of what happened. And it was probably the most dramatic incident of Jimmy Pearsall's adult life. It was an infamous part of the adult life, as well as some of the mental illness that he had was sort of dominated his younger years. And so Jimmy Pearsall and I became friends over the years. And when he married Jan, second marriage for each of them, when he married Jan many, many years ago, he invited me to the wedding. That's how good friends we had become. And it was very odd and very enjoyable when someone who you admired as a young boy becomes a friend as an adult. And it was a very unique situation. And I share that story because Jimmy Pearsall died yesterday, 87 years old, a remarkable person, overcame a great deal in his life. And if you're a baseball fan, or I assume even if he played with the Cleveland Indians, he played with the Boston Red Sox. That's where his first great fame. But he was really one of the most remarkable, outspoken baseball player, but a great baseball player, a great center fielder. And at 87 years old, he is gone. He is famous for so many reasons, so many things in his life. I know that I probably speak for a number of people that share the passing of Jimmy Pearsall. And again, that's my personal privilege tonight. And now, back to our discussion. We're talking about politics. We're talking about parties. We're talking about resistance. And I want to follow up just, you know, where we are right now is that this coming week, James Comey is going to go before the investigators in Washington Senate Committee, and he's going to answer questions. There was some question as to whether or not Donald Trump was going to exercise executive privilege to try to keep James Comey from talking. But he is going to talk. And, Karen, I want to start with you because we've not heard from you as much as I know you would like to speak. So we're going to start the second hour with you. Who do we believe? Because the story he tells is not likely to be the story that Donald Trump tells. What advice would you give to the audience, being objective? Put your professional hat on as a therapist. How are we supposed to look for truth this coming week?
I wish more people would ask that question, actually. I think Mr. Comey has an issue, and I have a bias there. I think he wants to be the most virtuous man in Washington. And I think he will do just about anything he can to look like there's a high road here. I think from everything that I would recommend to listeners, it is do some homework before you turn on the media as they edit and slash and spatter the testimony. And know that right now, from everything that – now, don't get me wrong. I'm not a political aficionado. However, I have a trained observer ear, and it says, tell me not just facts and experience, but I need to hear the truth as a voter. I'm going to ask people to listen as a voter, not as a party listener, Democrat or Republican, but listen as an American voter. What rings true? I trust the voters. I trust the people who would dare to listen to that. And really, the people that you really want to listen to carefully are the ones who are asking the questions. Because listen, you could just get red and blue paper and write down the bias in the questions.
Art Gonzalez, let me ask you, because once upon a time, James Comey was anathema to Democrats because he challenged Hillary Clinton. He made her life miserable. He made her run for the presidency difficult by when he chose to speak and by what he chose to say. He was not a favorite of Democrats. Now, since Donald Trump has fired him, he's become somewhat of a favorite for more Democrats. So let me ask you, trying to be as objective as you possibly can, being a vice chair of the Los Angeles Democratic Party, are you going to just automatically believe everything that James Comey says, or are you going to sort of look at maybe his modus operandi and maybe he's, as Karen suggested, maybe he's looking for a higher calling here?
I just can't wait for this show to begin, basically. I mean, I am so curious as to what it is that he's going to say. And I think that, yes, he was a detriment to the Hillary Clinton campaign and what he did and when he decided to do it. And I think he had, you know, coordinated that with the Trump campaign. And then here we are today where he was probably going to tell the truth. So Trump wanted to get rid of him. And, you know, what is it?
You think he coordinated that with the Trump campaign?
Anything is possible right now. I would say anything is possible right now. And I don't have proof of that necessarily. Mm-hmm. But I would say I'm very – back to the question. I'm curious as to what he's going to say this week, what kind of privileges he's going to use for that. And I think you know, he needs to shed light exactly on what's happening. And Donald Trump fired him because he was clearly scared about something. And I think we'll find out about it this week.
Now, Donald Trump said that he was concerned about the Russian. But again, his attorney general and the deputy attorney general said that one of the reasons why he was fired was because of the way he conducted himself in the Hillary Clinton investigation. Do you believe there's any truth to that motivation at all?
No, I think they're just using that as a scapegoat to appeal to why they actually did it. But the reality is I think there was something there. And I think Donald Trump found it, and he wanted to let it go.
Mark Viviades, you strike me as a guy. You're interested in the truth, the
Absolutely.
Whole truth.
Yes, the whole truth,
and
first of all.
And nothing but the truth?
Nothing but the truth.
Now, where do you come down on Comey? Because this is going to be a real challenge. We're going to go to a breakdown. Okay. I want you to get your answer because this is going to be a real challenge. Because if you believe in the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, it may not fit neatly with your party affiliation. Mark's going to get his response. We'll get response from our audience at 1-800-723 as well. I'm Bruce Dumont from Coast to Coast and Border to Border tonight from the beautiful Westwood One Studios in Culver City, California.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
Thank you all very much, Admiral Kelly, Captain Card, officers and sailors of the USS Abraham Lincoln, my fellow Americans. Major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
Most of my family, they never graduated high school, so I'm trying to break that barrier.
My daughter, Brooklyn, was also a motivation for me to go back to school. Every day after work, went straight to school, and it paid off.
At age 26, Kareem finished his high school diploma.
I could not have done it alone. I see the future is really bright for me.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Bruce Dumont back in Culver City. And Karen, we were talking about the testimony that's coming up with James Comey. But you have a unique experience. You have appeared before a congressional committee. You're the group you were with. They were targeted by the IRS, and you went and you testified. What was that experience like, and whatever happened to that investigation?
Yes, that was in June 2013 after Lois Lerner and the incidents that all came out with the IRS targeting. And it was kind of like a proctology exam through your nose. It was an exciting, honorable thing to do because there were six of us, mostly from grassroots agencies and groups, that were adjusting to this attack on our First Amendment rights. It now, just to update, now, finally, after nearly 3 to 4 years, depending on when your starting date is, we're getting to discovery because of all the roadblocks and delays that the IRS and the federal government has in discovery. Truth to the Vote earlier this year got a federal judge to say, hey, you guys have standing, you guys can go ahead, and now the dominoes are going to start to fall. So pay attention, folks. In the next 3 to 6 months, there'll be most likely new information coming out on the IRS scandal and who knew what and when.
Mark, I want to go back to you, Mark Gonzalez. I want to go back to you talking about the Democrats that... Mark Gonzalez.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry. That we'll give a chance to respond. The reaction of the people that you deal with to this focus on the Russia connection to Donald Trump, how does that help the middle-class people who you want to appeal to for the Democratic Party? Why is that important?
Look, I'll be frank. I think first and foremost, I think we believe, or a number of people believe, that our election was hijacked, number one. I think number two, Russia had a lot to do with it. And quite frankly, this is why Comey got fired. I think there was something there. He was in charge of the investigation.
How did they hijack it, in your view?
11 days prior to the election, suddenly there was an email scandal about Hillary Clinton's emails, and that's what Comey was investigating. And then now we go into present day, the investigation of the Russia interference in the elections, and suddenly he's fired.
Well, but what is the interference that you think is real?
I mean, the
Democrats believe that the Russians interfered.
Correct.
The intelligence agency chiefs said that they interfered, but I don't remember anybody providing any specific as to how did they interfere and what was the impact. Was Hillary lost and Donald Trump won, but how did they interfere? And did they not interfere in California?
Oh, I think they interfered in the counties and other states across the state, the certain red states, and in terms of technology, I think technology has changed, it's made it easier for them to interfere in that process. And I think,
but do you understand how they did it?
I can speculate.
I mean, I don't know.
Certainly, I think all of us in this room can certainly speculate what was done or what we think was done or how it was won. I can certainly speculate and say that maybe deep old voting machines or certain viruses or certain ways.
Absolutely no proof that any voting machines were touched.
If the Republican Party had lost this election, do you not think that Donald Trump would be the first one to say that this election was stolen and that somebody interfered with that?
That's a hypothetical. That's absolutely,
because he had already said that before the election. He said, "If I lose this election,
but that's not the issue now. Let me ask you this question: Do you believe the Russian Mark Viviades? Do you believe the Russians attempted to involve themselves in the campaign?
The Russians have been attempting to involve themselves in the campaign for decades, probably, but they have had absolutely no impact. The investigation of Russian, quote, collusion with the Trump campaign has been going on for 7 or 8 months. They've found absolutely zero proof of anything.
Because they fired the person investigating.
No. The investigation went on. Comey was fired from the FBI, but the investigation goes on. Nothing stopped that investigation whatsoever.
Comey, by the way, testified the last time he did testify. Mm-hmm. He testified that there was no evidence of collusion at that time. Now, that's what Comey testified before. Yeah. And again, also the deputy director said the same thing. Mr. McCabe said the same thing. And some of the outgoing intelligence, James Clapper said, I'm not a big fan of Clapper's, but he also said that there was no evidence found that he of collusion. So there's a difference between collusion and interference.
Right. And of course, Deputy Director McCabe is a Democrat. He wasn't appointed by the Republicans. And he said there's absolutely no evidence of collusion as well.
And he also said there has been no attempt by the White House or the Justice Department to impede his investigation at all.
Right. What the Democrats are contending is that Donald Trump tried to shut down the investigation by telling Comey, shut it down. That's not at all what happened. He said, look, General Michael Flynn's been fired. Can't we just put this behind us? It was not an order to shut down the investigation, and the investigation, in fact, was not shut down. So it was absolutely not what the Democrats are contending.
And there's a couple premises that need to be challenged here. One is, was there hacking of the Podesta emails, et cetera? Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. Was there any evidence, as Mr. Obama would say, any smidgen of evidence regarding collusion? Not one. And what happens is, to hijack a national election in our country, you'd have to have access to county, city, municipal, statewide. There's many locks, like going through, you know, from continent to continent. There are many locks that the people would have to, hackers would have to address. What we have here is, as Hillary Clinton would say, a nothing burger on steroids at this point. And I think this is like squirrel. People are shouting, squirrel, go look here. Go find some corruption here. Go find influence here. And I have heard nothing yet that indicates that there was any kind of collusion or that a crime has been committed. The only crime we have is that Michael Flynn got unmasked.
And many others have been unmasked as well, and that's a huge crime.
Yeah. Do you agree with that, that that's a crime? Mr. Gonzalez, that again, if it was against the law to release the name of Michael Flynn because he was an American whose name popped up in communications that were being, you know, observed by intelligence, was it wrong for them to release that name?
Well, if how they obtained it, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'll just leave it at that. I mean, it's just wrong, absolutely.
Right. I mean, that's the whole point of the surveillance program, is that they are not supposed to be unmasking the names of American citizens whatsoever. And that was what that program was built on. It's an invasion of privacy, and that's been violated, and we really need to look into that. Because with the unmasking coupled with the leaks that are coming out of Washington, it's a really dangerous situation.
Speaking of really dangerous situations, there are some people who believe, and many of them perhaps reside in the state of California, that the president's decision on the Paris Accord on climate control is the worst thing ever to happen in the history of the world. Do you agree with that, Mark Gonzalez?
Yeah, Trump is a national embarrassment, and pulling out of Paris is not the best move. It was spiteful, and it was just a move by that administration to do that. I cannot believe that we are putting our world at risk for this decision and joining Syria.
I don't even know where to begin. First of all, President Obama signing that was not constitutionally legal. It violated the treaty clause of the Constitution. It had to be approved by the Senate, which it was not. Number two, that put restraints on the United States, on the United States business and energy productions, as well as taxing the citizens to put the money into a big fund, whereas the biggest polluters in the world, China and India, no restraints whatsoever were put on them. As a matter of fact, they can increase the pollution that they send up into the air.
Karen, a question to you. Do you think that the way in which politics is played and perceptions and certainly media created perceptions that being opposed to the Paris Accord, the climate control, that by having the president pull out of that, it will paint the Republicans as anti-science?
Not at all. The Paris Accords, to my way of thinking, were the pay to play. We pay and everybody else gets to play. China waits, India waits. And these are the main polluters. I think this was an economic decision, not an environmental decision. Hmm. And follow up, when Mr. Trump has said, and I call people Mr., it's like the New York Times thing, but rather than president. So please, those of you who are taking offense, none intended. The fact is that since that decision was made, he has, and so has his staff, come out and said, that doesn't mean that we are against environmental or conservation procedures. It is a pullout, and I absolutely believe it was entirely economic because America was paying, and everybody else got to wait and play.
No. But withdrawing from the Paris Agreement will hurt job growth. I mean, that's what we're talking about here. Trump claims that it'll help the economy, but they're flat wrong.
Are you serious?
Yeah, well, the next job impact will be serious. Any small losses in fossil fuel industries will be more than offset by jobs gained due to investments in energy efficiency, clean energy generation, and other jobs in the clean industry.
Where are you reading those talking points from?
No, I'm just telling you.
This is going to explode the job market in the United States because it's going to unleash
businesses. Business leaders lined up to support the Paris Agreement because it will offer huge economic and job gains for the U.S.
Oh, no.
Now we will be
satisfied. Political question to you. Do you view this – is this a plus or a minus – for a California Republican trying to put the party back together again, this decision?
It may be a minus for California Republicans because in California they don't understand what this climate accord entails. They don't understand it, so because of the perception it may hurt, but it shouldn't.
Well, climate change is real, folks, and he believes it's a hoax.
Please.
1-800-723-8029. Let's get your calls in. 100 calls waiting, and we'll take it in a moment.
This is Larry King at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. Tonight we've got a special guest for you to meet. What do you like to do as a kid?
I like to play baseball. I like to watch television.
What was your favorite sports team?
Sports team growing up was the St. Louis Cardinals.
What was your favorite vacation?
I think the vacation we went to New York City to the World's Fair. See Yankee Stadium.
Who was your childhood hero?
Childhood hero, probably Hopalong Cassidy.
What was your biggest fear growing up?
My biggest fear probably was that I would irritate my father.
What's the silliest thing you've ever done?
Irritated my father.
Order your gift certificate now at museum.tv. That's museum.tv. Bruce Dumont back. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. 1-800-723-8289. And let's go to calls. Let's go to, I believe the name is Ali, and I believe this is a first. You are calling from Wrangell, Alaska, on line 5. Are you there? And you're listening to us on Sirius XM satellite radio. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
And are you really calling from Alaska?
I certainly am, yeah, a little town on an island called Wrangell.
Well, listen, this is the first call we've ever had from the state of Alaska, so nice to have you with us. Go ahead, ask your question.
I'm glad I got through. Well, it's more of a comment. It's it's, you know, I think President Trump is a genius for backing out of the Paris Accord. It's gotten almost every Democratic governor pledging to lower carbon emissions. He's got talking heads everywhere pledging to do it. He's got, you know, I'm hoping they'll start parking their jets. If you remember the Loretta Lynch, Bill Clinton scandal, you know, Bill had flown from New York to Phoenix to play around the golf. I mean, that's where we're talking about carbon emissions. That's what we should be talking about. You know, we should be talking about lowering those and parking some of these toys. And you know, we've had great commitments here from these governors and Hollywood stars to make a difference. So I think he's just a genius to get that discussion going.
Ali, let me ask you a question, because you're from Alaska, and again, I mentioned we've never had a call from Alaska. What's the big issue, or what are the one or two really big issues that people in Alaska care about more than anything else?
Just the government growing and too many rules, you know, and user fees, and not only are our taxes been going up, both in the state and in the, you know, the local level, but you know, the government and the state have continued to add user fees and you know, little hidden taxes just everywhere you turn.
Well, listen, thank you for your call. I'm heading to Alaska for the first time for vacation later this year, so I will look forward to enjoy the beauty of your state that I've heard about for about 50 years now. And I remember when you came into this. That's how old I am. I remember when you joined the union. Back shortly after we go to Kathy in WKBN in Poland, Ohio. We go from Alaska to Poland. Go ahead. Kathy, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead.
Okay. The reason I'm calling, one of the, I don't know who it was, I think it was the lady there, mentioned the Paris Accord. You know, we pay, they play. Well, I think it comes down to two things. We need to have clean drinking water, and we all need clean air in order to live. So I don't care if they're playing. I want to have those two things that are vital to my life. And I think it all boils down to the fossil fuel people and clean energy people. Right now, there are quite a few opportunities for employment for the clean energy industry. And, you know, just like time goes on, life changes, things change. And I think this is where we are presently in our history. As far as the Russian cyber attacks, I don't believe it was with voting machines or anything like that. One of the main things were with the cyber attacks as far as the bots. If you're reading something on the Internet, and I read everything on both sides, and the bots were, you know, you'd read articles about, you know, Hillary Clinton, and all of a sudden there would be a sentence there that would be very offensive. This is one of the main tactics that the Russians use in bringing down a Hillary Clinton's election. And I'm not saying that she, you know, didn't bring it down herself.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of things.
Thank you for saying that, because since the election, I have never had a Democrat on this program who didn't acknowledge that she ran a very poor campaign.
Well,
no,
she absolutely did.
Here's another one. I'll second that.
She definitely did. They got ahead of themselves.
Right.
When she was running, you know, she should have been Hillary Clinton. I didn't want to. I mean, I don't have real bad qualms with Barack Obama, but when she kept saying we're going to keep up what Barack Obama did, well, maybe a lot of people didn't like what he did, okay? And we didn't. There were a lot of things we didn't like about other presidents. But when you're running an election, I think you should run on your own and not mention somebody else. Now, as far as stopping Comey from testifying, that really kind of alerts my senses as to why you would want to stop somebody from testifying. First, he fired him, you know, when he wanted more, you know.
Yeah, but he backed away from that. That was
he's not going to do that.
It was allegedly something that was discussed, but it's not going to happen. I agree with you that would have been horrible politics, horrible optics, and would not have been a good thing.
And by the way, Bruce, Kathy mentioned. No. The climate accords and clean air and clean water, neither of which is addressed in the Paris Climate Accords, neither. All that is that the Paris Accords are discussing is greenhouse gases, mainly carbon dioxide, which is not a pollutant.
Let me ask you a question, because you're in Poland, Ohio, and I should have asked this of the person in Alaska, but I think I probably knew what his answer would be. When you hear a story like what happened in London yesterday, or has happened, you know, in Europe frequently, in London frequently, you're living in Poland, Ohio, which is just outside of Youngstown. Do you worry about terrorism at all?
Right, exactly. I mean, we're like in a little bottle, you know, like a bubble here.
Yeah.
But, you know, limiting the EPA, you know, and keeping the environment safe, I think is very dangerous. It's dangerous to all of our human lives. And whether you're a Democrat or Republican, I don't think it matters. I think we need to really think about those things. And, you know, I get so sick and tired of this. You know, again, Democrats, Republicans, come together and look at the situation and say, I don't care if you're Democrat, Republican, let's do something to make things better.
To make America great again. Kathy, thank you very much for your call.
Thanks, Bruce.
Appreciate it. Let's go to Rob listening to us in Redding, California, way up north in Redding, California. Nice to hear from Northern California tonight. Go ahead.
Hey, Bruce, my pleasure being able to speak with you again.
Great.
I love your show.
Thank you.
Hey, you know, we're in a red district, one of the rare districts in California that is red. We use paper ballots up here. And nobody at the polling station was speaking Russian that day. So we still lost the state by 2 million votes. But, you know, that's not saying anything about the countless amount of sanctuary cities in California. Wink, wink, if you know what I mean. So, I mean, let's talk about Russians. Let's talk about, you know, the speculation of how many unregistered people voted in the election. And the difference in numbers were, frankly, it was New York and California that were the difference in the popular mm-hmm. vote.
Right.
So, I mean, they can cry all they want about it, but the truth of the matter is, before Trump was even the nominee, everybody was on board on the left on trying to get that guy elected as the nominee because they thought it was going to be a cakewalk. And so I think what the biggest problem they have right now is that they were kind of complicit in the whole Trump mania buildup thing, and they were like, oh, Trump this, Trump that. Let's not talk about any of the other Republican candidates, because if he gets the nomination, Hillary's going to destroy him. Well, you guys got what you wanted, and it didn't work out. You got egg on your face. Trump's going to be here for 4 years and probably eight.
Mark Gonzalez, I want to get your reaction to the point about the Democrats, and I would add those in the mainstream media, they were chomping at their bit to run against Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Were the Democrats? I mean,
did you
see what was happening out there?
I mean,
that could catch fire.
I mean, we're in the bubble that is California. We went to Nevada. We won Nevada for Hillary.
Yeah.
And I would say that it was just sort of. It was a cakewalk. You just thought it was a cakewalk. You know, you just thought, we're going to win. Look at this guy. He's disrespecting women. He's disrespecting folks with disabilities. He's disrespecting Latinos.
That was your narrative,
Mexicans.
Please.
No, but that's what he did. Did he not do that?
That's your narrative.
That's what he did. That's
no,
a fact.
That's not you.
Is
you
that
made
a,
it
that's
sound
a fact.
That way. Sorry.
No, but it's a fact that he did that. He did it publicly. If he didn't tweet about it, he said it. And I think that at the time, Democrats thought, oh, this guy is impossible. He's not going to win.
What does it say about the country? What does it say about 62 million Americans that bought that line?
Watch what you say.
That they didn't want the same – that they didn't want the – they thought that Hillary was a reflection of the Obama administration. And that's what they didn't want, and they did not connect with her.
No, they connected with Donald Trump. That's why he won, not the other way around.
I don't connect with a billionaire. I'm sorry. Maybe you do, but I don't. But
I connected with him
62 million
way
people
more than I
wanted,
connected with Hillary
they,
Clinton.
They, because you're Republican.
She was the elitist. She was the elitist.
How was she the elitist?
Are you kidding me?
Tell me how she was the elitist.
She never worked in the real world. She was hobnobbing with
Wall Street.
Donald Trump
Wall Street
was handed money by his father to start his businesses.
That's
you're
a myth.
Telling me
that's a, myth.
That's a fact.
He
you're
was
telling me
$1 million
that she didn't work her way
billions,
up. Baloney.
Billions.
That is a load. Come
you
on.
You should look.
Come on. The guy who has all these bankruptcies.
No, but the support that she received was overwhelming from Wall Street.
Overwhelming.
And she was during the primary, and I'm sure there was a lot of people. Out who are part of the Democratic Party in California who would believe that Bernie Sanders would have been a stronger candidate. And I would say, and I've said this on this program, I think Bernie Sanders would have defeated Donald Trump because there was passion there. The conservatives would go nuts, but the reality was passion.
I agree with you. I think that to answer that question, I was in the middle when it came to that race. What has Bernie Sanders done in the last 20-something years, and what kind of accomplishments does he have that are not pie-in-the-sky ideas that were actually going to be accomplished? And you probably would agree with that. Mm-hmm. In regards to Hillary, I thought there was definitely a little bit of a disconnect in regards to her campaign and what they knew and what they could connect to. Now, could Bernie Sanders have taken on Donald Trump? Possibly. Did folks stay at home that should have come out on Election Day? That was important. That were Democrats? Yes, they absolutely did. And that's why Donald won.
Because they didn't identify with Hillary Clinton.
Sometimes pie in the sky wins. 1-800-723-8029. I'm Bruce Dumont, back with one more segment coming to you live from California tonight.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
There can be no stable and enduring peace without the participation of the People's Republic of China and its 750 million people. That is why I have undertaken initiatives in several areas to open the door for more normal relations between our two countries.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
I wasn't prepared to be a caregiver to mom. I had no idea how hard it would be and what I would need to know. Things I never thought of, like how to improve her mood and ways for me to stay positive. Luckily, I found the Caregiving Resource Center from AARP. It had articles about the basics, but also information about the hurdles I was facing. Caregiving Resource Center at aarp.org/caregiving. Articles, tips, and tools to help you both care for your loved one and care for yourself. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Bruce Dumont back, and let's go way up north. Let's go up to Spokane, Washington, where Cal is listening to us on Sirius XM Radio. Go ahead, you're on the air. Cal, are you there on line two? Hello?
Hello.
Go ahead, Cal. You're calling from Spokane, Washington.
Yes, I am.
Very good. Listening to us on Sirius XM Radio. Go ahead. Nice to have you with us.
I have two different questions. One is Trump's handling of the Paris Accord or getting out of it.
Yes.
Since that wasn't really done properly, Obama didn't get it ratified by the Congress. What if Trump would have came out and said, you know, I don't like this deal very good, but I'm going to allow Congress to vote and let them decide. That way, probably would have had the same end result, yet Trump wouldn't have the black eye. Would that have worked?
Mark Viviades, what do you think? That's a political strategic suggestion?
Probably not. I think he did the right thing. I think if that debate was thrown into Congress, there'd be a lot of even squishy Republicans that would be on the fence on that, which just not because that's the way they believe, but because they think that would be what was the most politically expedient move. So I'm glad he did it the way he did it.
All right, thanks for your call. Let's go to line one. Let's go to Mike listening to us in Sacramento, California on KTKZ. Nice to hear from the capital of the Golden State. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, thank you so much. I've really enjoyed your show, and I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
From the point of view of an ex California Democrat who's awakened to the massive criminality out here perpetrated by our government, I just really appreciate the point of view that seems like there's a little bit of back and forth instead of just 100% against the people. Just one quick point would be that one of our insiders at the Capitol building came and spoke to us and told us about how for the last 27 years, 100% of all the water reservoir building money has been kind of diverted, hijacked, pocketed, or whatever. And so while our population has doubled, the water reservoirs haven't been built, and the $30 billion to do it has been stolen or disappeared or whatever. This is just one indicator of what's been going on out here. No one knows about it because nobody will talk about it. So I really appreciate you.
Well, actually, we do know about it. It's not that the money's been stolen and putting into individuals' pockets. What happens is they pass bills or voter-passed initiatives here in California to, for example, fix the water infrastructure or fix the roads and bridges and infrastructure.
Well, that's been stolen, too.
Yeah, and the way they steal it is they then take it for their pet projects, put it back into the general fund, and not use it for what it was originally intended. And that's the crime.
We have a tweet, by the way, that said that California's greenhouse – or China's greenhouse gas emissions have been flat or declining for several years now. So that China is getting on board, even though we may be getting off board.
Yeah, they may be doing that voluntarily, which would be fine, but they're not in the Paris Accords required, as we are in the United States, to
but they're taking the steps necessary.
Good. I mean, that's why the climate accord's unnecessary. If companies and countries want to do it on their own, that's absolutely fine. But I don't want some international body dictating to the United States what we can and can't do.
This is a worldwide problem. Climate change is real, folks. It's not up to each and every single.
That's not the consensus any longer.
It's a life responsibility,
not
corporate.
Well,
I want to move on. Go ahead. Last word to you, Karen.
Coming back to Mike's question, go to a website I'd recommend called FamiliesSavingTheValley.org. It is a group of grassroots farmers and residents of the Central Valley, which, as you know, is now looks like Oklahoma in the 30s, and talk about what to do with water policy in California. There's a place to go, FamiliesSavingTheValley.org.
And can I just mention one other thing? Regarding climate change, there's a great website called FriendsOfScience.org, and they put forth some of the facts that hasn't been put forth through the press and through the climate believers.
At the beginning of the program, I began by asking whether or not anyone at this table or the people that they work with and are close with, whether they fear terrorism, and we got your reaction to it. In the last 6 months, the guy that's been in the focus of world attention is the leader of North Korea. And again, he's been bragging about that he's going to have a payload someday that's going to be able to deliver a nuke to Southern California. Are you worried about that, Mark Viviades?
Yes, I am definitely worried about that.
I want to get a quick reaction from everybody. Then, Karen, are you worried about it?
Yes.
Are you worried about it, Art Gonzalez?
Under this administration, absolutely.
Under this administration? In other words,
they're marching forward regardless of the administration.
I'm just saying, look, we were worried about it then. I think I'm even more worried about it now. I think Donald Trump is going to put us in a position where he's going to upset even more world leaders, including North Korea, and I think he's a risk for us.
Thank God we now have a strong leader that's going to protect us from the things that North Korea is marching quickly towards.
And I think Kim Song-un.
Should we not, Mark Gonzalez, should we not be testing our ballistic missiles to shoot down a missile that might be fired from? Is that a provocative move that you would oppose?
I would say it's very provocative. Look, I'm not somebody who's going to benefit from war. I think it's people who look like me who will have to go to it, who will suffer those consequences of it, and that's when Donald Trump will make his money. For me, I'm not interested in getting in World War III. Maybe you guys are on the other side of the table, but I'm not.
What we just did, the anti-ballistic missile that we tested, was a defensive move, not a provocative offensive move. That's something we have to do to show them that, hey, if you think you're gonna try to pull something, we can defend it, and then we'll take you guys out.
I just have a comment. When you said people like me who have to fight it, who look like you, Kim Song-un is a maniacal, crazy family person. He's got crazy in his genes.
I was referring when we go to war, if we were to go to war.
Well, the fact is, if we don't talk about national security and act from it, shooting down incoming missiles in California, yeah, I think we need to practice that more.
And if we don't, people that look like me and you could be nuked.
Or else, Donald Trump will run for re-election without a blue state.
Yes. Well, listen, 2018 is around the corner. We're happy to take out those congressional members, and we'll do it at the ballot box.
We are out of time. Thanks to Art Gonzalez. Thank you for Mark Gonzalez, Mark Viviades. Karen Kenny, thank you very much for joining us tonight. Anthony Vitello is the chief engineer. Art Martinez is the board operator. And Miriam Gonzalez, they've been the screener tonight. And thanks to Dan Dorfman back in Chicago. I'm Bruce Duwan. Until next Sunday night, good night from Culver City.